This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The role of dad used to be that of the breadwinner, and after a hard day at the office or the factory or the farm, he would come home to rest. The time he spent with the kids was short, usually devoted to discipline. He wasn't the nurturer. That job fell to mom. But gradually, as women went to work, the role of father in the modern household began to change. Or did it? And what exactly is the impact of a father on his children? That's what Dr. Jeffrey Shears wanted to know, and he set out to understand that impact by holding a fatherhood summit. Dr. Shears is an associate professor in the social work department at UNC Charlotte, whose work since 1999 has focused on issues of fathering. He became a member of the National Early Head Start Research and Evaluation Consortium, where he served as the director of the Father Study and has published numerous research articles. He's also the author of What All Dads Should Know, and he joins us in our Spirit Square studio. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Nice to have you with us. Also with us is Kelly Williamson and Rod Garvin. Kelly is the senior case manager of the Safe Journey Parents as Teachers program through Communities in Schools of Charlotte-Mecklenburg. Could be the longest title ever.
Could be. Could very well be. Thank you.
She's been working with teenage mothers in Charlotte for more than 5 years and participated in the Fatherhood Summit, as did Rod Garvin, who is also, in his real life, director of member engagement for the Charlotte Chamber of Commerce. But you're here today just as a dad.
That's why I'm here. Glad to be here.
Involved in fatherhood. Thank you for joining us as well. I have to ask, Kelly, senior case manager for the Safe Journey Parents as Teachers program, what is that?
Yes, sir. Well, that's a program here in Charlotte through Communities and Schools that serves pregnant and parenting teens. Mm-hmm. So we assist them with high school completion, but as such, we kind of focus on the holistic health of the child and the family. So this fatherhood conversation is important to us because we would love to have funding to be able to serve the whole family, because we know that's really what helps children when they have both parents in place learning mm-hmm. this information versus having the mother learn in a silo. So we're bringing all these things into the home for the teen mom, but that we know there's another person that's involved a lot of times in this child's life.
Okay. Dr. Shear, since your work in the area of fatherhood's been going on for so long and it predates the Fatherhood Summit, which was recent, explain your personal, because you've done a lot of research. What is your personal interest in this topic?
Well, my personal interest, to go back to how I kind of got into fathering, I got into fathering before I became a dad. I actually rushed and had children, got married and had children, so I can really become an expert. So I was recruited to be to study fathers at Early Head Start Studies, you mentioned. And my personal kind of goal is to really bring to light what fathers do, the importance of fathers. You know, I often say that everybody knows that mothers are important. If you ask any person on the street, you know, a mom is important, sure. And they could probably give you a laundry list of why moms are important to children's development. But what most people don't know are the unique contributions that fathers make to children's development, that there is a deficit, there's a void there when there's not a father. And so that's kind of my kind of personal goal, is to really help educate. And, you know, I started the Fatherhood Summit by, you know, talking about the Safe Journey program, because we have a number of very wonderful programs in the city, in the community, that support moms and children. But the empirical research certainly highlights that those programs become much more effective when you have an involved father, particularly with children outcomes, with parenting and things of that nature. So a part of this is just that Charlotte is kind of a cold spot nationally in regards to services, supports for dads. And so kind of one reason we decided to have this whole Fatherhood Summit is to bring to light the importance of fathers in the lives of children, to also bring people in the community who are doing this work, bring them together in one venue and have them be able to collaborate and work together, and then to really talk about how do we improve services for dads, how do we improve supports for fathers in our community.
If it is true, as you say, you can walk down the street and talk to anybody and they'll give you a laundry list of what's important about mothers in the lives of children, or just what's important about mothers, why do fathers not have a similar list? Why could these people not come up with a similar list for dads? What is that? What does that say?
Well, I think that I think there's a devaluing of fathers. You kind of talked about the traditional father, the guy who's the breadwinner. You know, I think our national response is that if you are a provider, you're doing your job. You know, I think we send mixed messages to fathers who are not in the home. Like, if you send a check to the other side of town, then you're okay. All right. But the really important parts of fathering comes from the interaction and interaction with children. And so so I think there's a devaluing of fathers and a lack of understanding and about what fathers do. And so I think that's the missing piece. So I think as we try to educate people in the community, practitioners, as we educate dads themselves about you're really important to a lot, and educate moms about father's importance, I think that's ultimately beneficial for the community because people start to gravitate and pay more attention to what dads do.
When you talk to young people about the importance of fathers, does it come as a surprise to them? Have they ever thought about these things that you say are important?
I don't think it comes as a surprise. I think one thing we had the Father Summit, we had a presentation of children's representations of their fathers. And I think once you ask children to talk about their dads, it allows them to really reflect on what their dads do, how important they are. You know, children talk about fathers as playmates, and that's certainly supported by the literature. People talk about fathers as disciplinarian, you know, people talk about fathers as educator. And so these roles tend to come out and resonate with children. Like I said, certainly support the literature that there is particular roles that dads play. But there again, if you ask children, that allows them to really think about who is my dad? How is he around? What does he do? And children can easily articulate how fathering is different than mothering.
Anecdotally, we think we know that the role of fathers has changed substantially over the last 50 years. And I set it up in the beginning by saying that Dad used to go to work and he'd come home and he would sit in the Barca lounger and dinner would be on the table. And Occasionally he would have to say, stop that. Mm-hmm. And that was his job. Mom was doing the dishes. She was doing the laundry. She was cleaning the house. She was taking care of the kids. She was changing the diapers. She did everything. Mm-hmm. Still does in many cases.
Exactly.
Anecdotally, people tell us that the role of fatherhood has changed, that fathers have become more involved in their children's lives, with women working outside the home. Some fathers choose to stay home and become the house dad and do the laundry and all the things that mom used to do. Is that true in many cases? Has the role actually changed, or are we just hearing stories?
No, the research supports that the fathering role has changed. Part of it has to do with the family makeup. As you say, a lot of moms are outside the home now, and so out of necessity— fathers' roles have changed. I like to talk about it as the Cleaver dad and the Cosby dad.
Okay.
In regards to how the roles have changed. I know I'm probably dating myself because sometimes when I give these presentations, people say, who was Cleaver?
But, that's sad.
Right. You know,
some people might say, who is Cosby?
Somebody might say, who's Cosby? Exactly. So I talk about this kind of traditional, you know, kind of traditional fathering roles, you know, protector, disciplinarian. But we also had this kind of modern role, kind of represented by Cosby, that's more affectionate. Do more caretaking, do more things in the home. So that's kind of a paradigm shift that we're going through as fathers to move from a more traditional, maybe not move from traditional, but adding some of those more modern parenting and more modern fathering activities onto the list.
How much of modern fathering, and all of you can jump in on this, is impacted by the fact that today we seem to have a lot more societal changes at work. We have a lot of people who are not living together as married couples. Sometimes they've never been married, and they have these children out of wedlock, and the father doesn't live in the house, doesn't come by very often sometimes. How much of the role of father is being impacted by that?
So, Mike, I can speak to that from personal experience. And I come to this conversation as the father of a beautiful 14-year-old daughter.
Mm-hmm.
She does not live with me from a full-time custody standpoint, but I'm very involved in her life. When she was young, I would spend time with her more than once a week. Now, because of her busy schedule, it's usually on the weekends when I'm able to see her. And from the data and the research that I see, there seems to be sort of a duality from the standpoint that we have more biological fathers than ever before who don't live with their children. But at the same time, for those who are involved, they're involved more, to Dr. Shearer's point. So the fathers that are active are even more active and involved in day-to-day activities. But unfortunately, there's 24 million children who don't live with their biological fathers.
You, Kelly, work a lot with teenage mothers. So do you find that to be the case, that their fathers are, even if they don't live with the teenage mothers, are more involved today than they were before in the lives of their children? Or is it the opposite?
I would say it depends on the situation. And I can speak to that question also personally and professionally. As a person who doesn't have a relationship with my biological father, and I've been a single mother for 5 years, and I think that there's a dangerous misnomer that because mothers have had to step up and be so strong that fathers aren't needed. But from a mother's perspective, it frees you up to be a better mother and to optimize your mothering and parenting skills when you have another person. So you don't have to be the protector, the provider, the nurturer, everything all in one. It helps to divide some of those responsibilities so that you can be the best mom and things can just have that optimal effect for the child.
This may be a little off the topic, but there have been articles about this, and I think I saw a cartoon the other day about this, that women don't need men because women have jobs. What do they need men for? Aside from having children, what do they need them for? Is that pervasive? I mean,
and I think that's the danger, because it's not necessarily all about what I need as a person in a relationship. It's about what the family needs and what the child needs. And as Dr. Shears has indicated, there are some things that fathers do with play and the way they interact with children that mothers just don't typically do, because our female brain is wired differently. So when you think about play with fathers, the rough and tumble play and the emotional regulation that you learn with that, when you think about exploring how mothers, we hover, we're protective of our children. We don't want them to do anything and get out of our sight. So if they don't have that other perspective, how do they learn that? Or even for young teenagers, how do you learn how to be in relationship with the opposite gender without seeing that, whether that's through a biological father or someone playing that fatherhood role?
Mm-hmm. How did you learn it?
Observation, the school of hard knocks, and a praying mother, if I may say that on the radio.
You can say that, yes. And one of the things you can say, yes.
And, you know, I don't know if I want to touch about the idea of women not needing men, but from a parenting standpoint, you know, empirical research certainly supports that there's a bidirectional relationship in regards to parenting. So historically, we've all said that moms influence how fathers father. But, you know, more current research talks about how fathers influence mothering. And so when you start getting at parenting, that are moms less stressed when there's involved father? Yes. And I even talk about it, even if it's a co-parenting relationship, the parents are together, that fathers still need to support their mother's child, only because it makes her a better mother, you know. And so, and particularly when you're they're in a relationship, we know that fathers influence how mom's mother in regards to discipline practices and attitudes and behaviors. Moms are less stressed when there is a involved positive father. And so in regards to a fathering or a parenting aspect, you know, fathers are important. So, like I said, I don't know if I want to touch them. Do women need men?
Well, that's
from a parental standpoint, yes.
It's less stressful for the mom if the father is involved.
Yes.
But it would seem to me that it could also cause a point of stress if the father is involved in ways that the mother doesn't agree with or doesn't understand. Is that a problem?
Oh, or when there's when moms are wanting fathers to be involved and fathers aren't, or they aren't in a certain manner, yeah, it does cause stress.
Dr. Jeffrey Shears, Associate Professor of Social Work at UNC Charlotte, author of What All Dads Should Know. We will continue our conversation in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Goddard School, hosting an ice cream social open house at Charlotte area locations, Thursday, 4 to 6 p.m., goddardschool.com/Charlotte. Well, in recent years, economics has been a major topic of conversation with what seem to be two diametrically opposed points of view locking horns. But according to one economist, at least, some of what you think you know about the U.S. economy is wrong. Some of what she says may not only surprise you, but make you a little hot under the collar. And we'll hear from her on the GDP, to debt, to deficits, unemployment rates, Social Security, and more tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Detroit files for bankruptcy, the city's future after decades of mismanagement, population flight, and loss of tax revenue.
You're invited to join the discussion on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Dr. Jeffrey Shears is with us with UNC Charlotte. What All Dads Should Know is the name of his book. He's also done a lot of research and written scholarly papers on fatherhood. Rod Garvin is here as a father. Kelly Williamson is senior case manager for Safe Journey Parents as Teachers for Community in Schools of Charlotte-Mecklenburg, and they all participated in a recent fatherhood summit. Which took place here in Mecklenburg County. Rod, you say that there is an epidemic of fatherlessness in America. What's driving it?
There's a variety of factors. Economics plays a significant role in that, educational level. It's also cyclical. So if you grow up without a father, you're more likely to not be involved in your children's lives. And, you know, when we talk about, you know, how important is it for a father to be involved? Well, we know that there's a significant socioeconomic cost when fathers aren't involved. So for those who don't have fathers in the home, they're four times more likely to be in poverty, more likely to drop out of school, higher percentage of those who are incarcerated, using drugs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So problems, our social problems are compounded when fathers aren't involved.
So it's not unlike the cycle of violence in domestic violence, where if you grow up with a bad role model, you are likely to perpetuate what the bad role model did to you. If you have no father, you're likely to be absent as well.
Not guaranteed, but it increases the probability.
Because Jim tweets, "My biological father was absent. That fact has made me very involved as a father to my own children. His absence was a blessing."
And I talk about that. If you hear stories of dads, fathers either emulate or they emulate or compensate. So, and I talk about that in my book about, you know, friends of mine who didn't have a dad or had a bad experience with their father and how they went overboard in raising their own children. But we have to understand how men learn. And so, men learn from modeling. And this whole theory about how men learn to fathers in a generational transmission of parenting, that we learn a father from our fathers. Mm-hmm. And so, I often joke that if you really get into stories about dads and what they do with their kids, they tend to do the same things that their fathers did with them. So you ask a guy that takes their child hunting, well, their fathers probably took them hunting. If they work on a car, their fathers probably, worked on a car. And people ask me, like, why are your three girls all play sports? It's like, because my dad didn't have any daughters. So the only thing I knew from my dad was we always went to the park and played ball. So when I had my girls, that's what I knew how to do. And so, but it's not a death sentence if you don't have a father. Like I said, men often compensate because they understand the hurt, the pain, and the void of not having a father in their life. And so they want to make sure that their children don't experience similar things.
How do women learn to be mothers? You work a lot with teenage mothers. How do they learn that?
I think it's the same thing. That's one thing that we say in our curriculum is you either learn from your experience. Well, you learn from your experience either way. But you either kind of become your mother, the model that you've seen, or because of bad experiences or things that you've seen, you say, hey, I don't want to do that.
Well, let me ask you this, because I know you're dealing a lot with teenage mothers, and if it is true that the absence of fathers in families cause all kinds of problems, among them promiscuousness and a lack of understanding of relationships between men and women as children grow up and can't see that in their own lives. I've lost the question. Do these young girls that you work with, do they have problems understanding the role of a father because they haven't gotten a father in their own lives?
You see that a lot. You see a lot of girls with the daddy issues. Sometimes that plays out in relationships. Sometimes that plays out in the way that they mother and the way that they think of men. But it's hard to answer that question specifically because their experience is so different. Some of them come into motherhood very young and they've had a bad experience that led to that. Sometimes it's sexual abuse, things like that. So, of course, their view of men is completely different than someone who is in a consensual relationship with their child's father.
Yes, and I think that women do model. I think people in general model behavior, but I think men more so. You know, I often joke to women, like, why do you think your significant other's passed this building 7 times without asking a question? Because he's lost. And men are going to figure it out. They're not going to, you know, women are much more likely to call and ask about child rearing or whatever.
Right.
I often joke that I have a brother. I'm an expert on fathering. My brother's yet to call and ask me a question about being a dad. Because men just going to figure it out. And so men are much more likely in the way they learn to make sure they're going to figure it out and they're going to model behavior without necessarily asking questions. Where although women do that, they're much more inclined to ask questions. The other thing about having a relationship with your dad in regards to women, I think, you know, women have sometimes when they don't have a relationship with their father, they have lower expectations. I often cite a Newark study to ask unwed teen mothers if their children's fathers were good fathers. And they often reported yes. But when they dug a little deeper and asked why, they said, well, because he brings diapers by sometime. He's bought the baby a Nike sweatsuit or whatever. But you have to put it in context that a lot of these young ladies never had a dad. So they don't know what being a real father is. And they live in communities without fathers. And so I think when you don't have that model, that relationship, then it lowers your expectations of what fathers should be
this
doing.
This epidemic of fatherlessness that Rob Garvin talks about, is this society-wide, or are we talking about a specific community here or communities?
We're seeing it throughout society, but there's definitely a disproportionate impact on the African-American and Latino community. So in the Black community in particular, figures are anywhere from 64% to 70% in terms of those who don't live with their biological fathers, over 34% for Latinos, and that's compared to about 25% of whites. So, and those are groups that are disproportionately affected when we talk about those other issues that I brought up, you know, such as poverty, lower educational levels, incarceration. One really troubling statistic is that currently African Americans and Latinos make up 30% of the population collectively, but over 60% of the incarcerated population. Mm-hmm. So that's just a very tangible look at how this issue can impact that particular group. And I got it because I'm a father of a daughter, I have to speak to that issue as well. And this is interesting. This is a very timely conversation. You know, Oprah Winfrey has her series on fatherless sons and fatherless daughters right now. I was just watching it last night. And, you know, one of the most important roles for a father in a daughter's life is to help her with her self-esteem, a strong sense of self-worth, picking an appropriate mate. And as much as it pains me sometimes to have these conversations with my daughter, we're talking about boys and we're talking about dating. And she's coming out of middle school, getting ready to go to high school. And she's even noticing differences in behavior for some of her friends that don't have a relationship with her father. So it's a real-time issue.
There are empirical evidence of what happens in the absence of a father on the child. Can you share some of those numbers? What is the impact when the father isn't present in a child's life?
Well, I think it's one statistic that points to only 13% of kids in the juvenile justice system are from biological married parents. Only 13% of kids in the juvenile justice system.
So the vast majority are from broken homes.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, we see higher levels of, self-esteem, grades in schools, kids with higher suicidal rates come from fatherless homes. So
63%.
Yes. So if the research certainly shows that there is some impact when there's a father present. Now, people certainly try to coin it with, well, there's two parents and they're, you know, higher income levels. But I think when you control for a lot of those things, that you still see some of the kind of negative things that negative societal issues mm-hmm. when there is a fatherless home. So 85% of children with behavioral disorders live in homes without a dad. 70% of juveniles come from fatherless homes. So, you know, the research, or at least the statistics or descriptive research, certainly supports fathers being in a home.
People who are incarcerated are 2 times likely, I understand, to have had no father
right.
in the home. Let's flip the coin. What are the advantages? What happens when dad and mom are together and dad is taking an active role in their child's lives?
Well, so even when mom and dad aren't together, but there's an active father.
Okay.
So as I said, we see a higher self-esteem. And Raj kind of talked about that, higher self-esteem with girls. Some studies have even showed that women are more likely to go into the hard sciences because of their father's nurturing and support. And so certainly there are academic benefits. In regards to boys' masculinity and how those things play out, about how they define manhood, I often say that, you know, if you don't have a father in your life, then who really dictates what being a man is? More likely it'll be your peers when you're a teenager. And so some of those things you talk to about women, promiscuity and those things are maybe less likely when there's a father in the house because mm-hmm. he's helping define what being a real man is.
I also read that children with present fathers have higher achievement test scores, higher levels of cognitive abilities, better school performance, and higher levels of social competence. Do we understand why?
Well, I can go back to early childhood development to really talk about how children, school readiness and social-emotional regulation. And so Kelly kind of alluded to it. For example, fathers are much more involved in physical play when they're little child, children or toddlers. Their physical play is highly correlated with social-emotional regulation, which is highly correlated with school readiness. And so a lot of what you see is how children are reared when they're really young, when they have a father in their mm-hmm. lives. And so there's actually quite a bit of empirical research to show that father's involvement early on. Then we start getting into early childhood and teen years when there's a father that's really encouraging self-esteem. Some of that has to do with interaction in regards to doing homework and whether it's discipline and things of that nature. So a father's role across the continuum is super important, and you start seeing outcomes later on in regards to educational outcomes.
You and Communities and Schools got together to host this Mecklenburg County Fatherhood Summit this month because you saw a gap in community programs, which you've already alluded to, that we are like ground zero for this, or we like to be number one in Charlotte, and we're not number one in this. We're trailing the rest of the nation. And they, how did you put together this summit? Who was involved? How did it work? What okay. issues? Who decided what issues would come up?
Well, we developed it was Communities and Schools, College of Health and Human Services at UNC Charlotte, Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity, and we came together because we started having conversations. You know, with Safe Journey, I was doing some work with them, and you know, we started talking that, you know, out of all these teenage girls and the children, I'm pretty certain there's a dad somewhere, and we're really not doing a lot with them. And so that's how the conversation started.
Why are dads left out? We've already acknowledged that there are not very many programs for that in Mecklenburg County or in North Carolina. Why?
I think in a large part it ties to funding. We've applied
for... We have funding for the moms and not for the dads?
Exactly.
Why?
We have these programs for single moms. I could think of several off the top of my head. But when we've applied for grants or expressed interest in fatherhood programs, either the money's not there or the money is so restricted. Like there was an opportunity last year, but it was only for custodial dads. We weren't able to guarantee we could get enough custodial dads to make use of the money, so we weren't able to take advantage of that opportunity.
I'm just curious, in this it's still a relatively paternalistic society, why men who are making the rules and or traditionally have made the rules have not taken care of men. They'll develop programs for women and mothers, but not for men and fathers. Why?
You know, that's a good question. I think part of it is this just has been a history of issues and program supports for children that involve moms. I mean, that it's just it's. I think we're moving more towards supporting dads. I mean, I always say 10 years ago, you didn't see a billboard to say, have you hugged your child today? Being a good father, things of that nature. So I think it's just traditionally. The Early Head Start study, which I was a part of, that study ran for 2 years. A nationally funded 3,001 families, nationally funded study to look at all those things that affect children's development. It wasn't until the study was 2 years old when people started to report back, like every time mom and child comes in for assessment, this man shows up. You know, it was 2 years afterward. People were like, we probably need to collect some data on dads. We really want to look at everything that affects children's development. Mm-hmm. So, you know, men are kind of in the afterthought when we start talking about those things that are beneficial for children. So I think that's part of why we still see a void.
Princess on Facebook writes, you touched on this a little bit, mentioning how some mothers think they don't need fathers because they have great jobs. How has extreme feminist ideology influenced how men approach fatherhood? I feel that feminism has pushed back too much against men in general instead of singling out those men who neglected the family or women.
Yeah, well, we think about moms, and you have to say that women are often the gatekeepers to the children, especially when there's a non-custodial father. So if the mother doesn't have a good relationship with the father, she can easily decide that it's not important, or there can be some barriers to the father being involved with the child, versus when they're able to work together and come together for the good of the child, despite what their relationship is or the mother's idea of them in a romantic way.
Right. You were nodding in recognition, Rod.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. There are a significant number of fathers who don't live with their kids that want to be involved, but unfortunately the mothers don't allow that to happen because of the relationship they have with the father, a bad divorce, or personal issues that get in the way. So that's an issue.
Don't the courts get involved and make that happen?
You know, one of the interesting things, you know, I had the pleasure of being a moderator for the Fatherhood Summit, and it was a learning experience for me as well. There are some rights that a lot of fathers aren't aware of. So there's some things that could be done from a legal standpoint. But unfortunately, in some cases, and again, there's more moms that want fathers to be involved than not. But that is another factor that we have to take into consideration.
How would you describe a good father? What is a good father? Is there a definition for that?
I would describe a good father as an involved father. When I say involved, that an involved father that's child-centered, that supports his child in whether it's activities or supports his child in their pursuits. They're supportive. Of course, we start, you know, really digging down to, of course, he's a provider, he's a playmate, those kind of roles. But I think if you just kind of generalize it, you know, men talk about, you know, what is being a good father? If you ask a man what is being a good father, the research says that men say being there for my child. And being there may consist of several different things, okay? And so if I could just put it in a nutshell and summarize it, being a good father is being there for your child. And then your child dictates what being there for them is.
If you didn't have somebody who was there in your life, do you even understand that?
From a...
You mentioned the hole in their hearts because
right,
and the hurt. Do they understand the hole in the hurt, if you can do this in 10 seconds?
Oh, wow. I think children idealistically think that they should have both parents, and they know something is wrong when they don't.
Okay, I'm going to come back to that because that's a pretty important part of this conversation. We're talking about fatherhood. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Crown Clinic, celebrating 10 years serving Charlotte area families, full in-house services in internal medicine, urgent care, and minor trauma, accepting new patients. Details at crownclinicpa.com. Coming up at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, after months of speculation, Detroit finally filed for Chapter 9 bankruptcy protection. The move is not a surprise after decades of mismanagement, population flight, and loss of tax revenue. Diane and her guests will discuss what's next for the Motor City and its citizens and its investors and employees. That's coming up in 20 minutes. And if you'd like to join our conversation about fatherhood, WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks is a great place to start. We're coming right back.
News happens at any time with a speed that can take your breath away. Public radio reporters are getting the story straight right here in the next state over and around the world. It's a network that keeps you connected. It's a network that never shuts down. Check in for an update on your world.
NPR News plus local and regional news all day on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about fatherhood and the impact of fathers in the lives of their children with Dr. Jeffrey Shears, Associate Professor of Social Work at UNC Charlotte and the author of What All Dads Should Know. Rod Garvin is a father, and he's here, even though he works for the Chamber and Director of Membership.
Fathers work at the Chamber, believe it or not.
Amazing. And Kelly Williamson is Senior Case Manager of Safe Journey Parents as Teachers for Community in Schools, Charlotte-Mecklenburg. I asked a question just before the break and didn't really give you a sufficient time to answer. You already mentioned that young people, young fatherless children, feel this hole in their heart because of the absence of their fathers. And I asked you, can you understand how to be a good father if that person wasn't in your life? Because you have the hurt and you carry that with you, can you get to the bottom of being a good father when it's your turn in the absence of a father in your own life?
You certainly can become a good father when you didn't have an active father in your life.
Is it easy to learn, or does it, you have to be taught? Do you have to go to an outside source, or is it intuitive?
I think part of it is intuitive in regards to your wanting to be there. You know, I think it's intuitive. Now, how you parent or how men parent, let me put it that way, I think that is a kind of a modeling thing. So what I've seen is men learn how to father if they didn't have a dad from their friends or family members or from community or whatever. You see a lot of events in other areas, not Charlotte, where they have planned out activities for fathers and children so men can see how other men father.
When I asked you what it meant to be a good father, you said in many cases it's just being there for the children. But there are a lot of guys who are there, but they're emotionally absent. Which is worse, being there and not really being involved emotionally or not being able to connect to your children or not being there but trying to connect?
Wow, that's a good question.
I've got a great way to illustrate that.
Okay.
So Dr. Shears mentioned Bill Cosby, you know, Cliff Huxtable in The Cosby Show, archetypical father. He's the father we all probably would want regardless of our race and ethnicity. Mm-hmm. And it was groundbreaking in terms of the way a black father was portrayed on television. Contrast that with Al Bundy with Married with Children.
Yeah.
Loved Married with Children. Funny show, but wouldn't necessarily want Al Bundy as my father. So that's an example of somebody who's in the home but isn't really engaged, right. Seems to tolerate his family more than love them. So that's just kind of a contrast, and that helps me think about what a good father is.
Dr. Shears, you say that there is an anger that resides in young black males as a result of not having a nurturing relationship with their fathers. I'd like you to explain that anger, but I'd also like to ask you if that's exclusive to young black males.
Well, I don't know if it's exclusive to young African-American males. Part of it is coming out of a documentary that will be forthcoming in the fall that's called Spitting Anger by a colleague of mine, Kenneth Braswell, that looks at this issue in black men. And part of that reason is because there is such a high number of African-American males who grew up in households without a father. And so that's kind of where the documentary is focused. But I wouldn't necessarily say that the void that is experienced with young men that's just an African-American community.
I've seen news reports on this or documentaries or long-form pieces on this in the African-American community, and I suppose it can apply to young white males as well. Mm-hmm. But because these young men are being raised without a father and they're being raised in neighborhoods that are highly matriarchal because there are lots of absent fathers, they resent women. Because women are the authority figures, and they don't see any men telling them what to do.
There is some literature that talks about the formation of male ideology and masculinity within that domain. There, like I said, there are people that they aren't able to express their masculinity because mm-hmm. of the matriarchal society. And so, people often say that within the black community, what is the role of black men if black families are matriarchal? So this, that struggle about where am I supposed to do in this family?
Where's my place?
Where is my place? And so I think that's something that we're continuing to research and study mm-hmm. to really try to figure it out. But the anger piece really comes in that, if you interview children and ask them about their fathers, children have an ideological sense of supposedly having both parents. Mm-hmm. And they know something is wrong. That's why I was trying to get into that void in their heart. They see it's wrong that my dad isn't here, my dad isn't around. And then children really start to feel, what's wrong with me that my father won't come to see me?
Right.
That, is it my fault? They take it personal. And so children grow up with that, that seed in their heart that there's something wrong with them because their father isn't involved.
Kelly mentioned that she can count off all these program for young mothers that are available in our area, but not very many for parents and for fathers. And in fact, Dr. Shears, you point out that in Mecklenburg, there is only one program, and it's conducted by the Sheriff's Department for fathers who have been incarcerated or who are under correctional supervision. Nothing wrong with that, but why wait so long?
Well, there again, I think a number of issues come to bear about why we don't have a lot of long-term supports. Now, there's been programs that are hit or miss, programs that maybe start in this community for 6-8 weeks or whatever, but often that is among social service agencies, that's kind of the comment that everybody knows about the fathering program sponsored by the Sheriff's Department, which is a great program, but you have to get incarcerated to get those services. And so a part of the Fatherhood Summit was to bring people who are doing other things in other areas in the community together to highlight what they're doing and to, as I say, bring more programs and more services for dads.
Let's talk about some of the findings of the summit or some of the things that came up during that summit. And one of them you've already mentioned, I think it's kind of interesting, that fathers, present fathers, were more likely than mothers to be involved in social activities, in play and physical interactions. That actually surprised me. Women don't get involved. Moms don't get involved in that kind of thing.
Well, when I say play, it's physical play.
Yeah.
So fathers are much more likely to be in physical play, particularly with little kids.
Get moms down on the floor with them.
Yeah, moms are more in the patty cake, playing cognitive games. Fathers are much more involved in physical play. And fathers are much more involved in social activities. And some of those findings are different across race and ethnicity, which is another conversation. Mm-hmm. But so fathers are involved in a different aspect. I often say fathering ain't mothering. That fathers do things different than moms, and there are benefits to children.
Is that because the moms are too busy just running the house? Because moms still run the house pretty much in many cases. Is that why they don't have because one of the findings was that fathers averaged more playtime with their children than mothers did.
I think it's, like you said, it's the type of play. So mothers are spending time with children. Of course, your time is divided because you have other things to do. But mothers are sitting down and reading. Mothers are doing playing with dolls. Mothers are doing kind of the more nurturing activities. When a mom comes in, you immediately want to hug your child and pick them up and that kind of thing. Versus when a father comes in, it's more the wrestling and the play, whether they're playing with a little girl or a little boy. So the time spent is there, but just because of the way our brains are wired, typically moms engage in a different way.
And you've said, probably using different words, that fathers are more playful and less restrictive than mothers in the kind of play they engage in. So what's the impact of that long term? Mothers, I guess, follow the rules and fathers don't, and so they're sending a mixed message, but they're sending you two different versions of a way to navigate the world.
Well, I think the long-term effects in regards to physical play, and we'll talk about that specifically, and I alluded to it, that self-regulation. So the example I give is fathers come into a house and the toddler is on the floor playing quietly. the child's activity level is flatline. You know, everybody knows the first thing a dad does when he comes into a room, his child is playing quietly, he starts rough and tumble play. Mm-hmm. So this child's activity level suddenly spikes. Yes. And so he plays with him 5-10 minutes and sets the child down. Okay. Well, that child doesn't experience that with a mom, or rarely experience that with a mom. And so what it does is that child's activity level suddenly spikes and then comes back down. And so that's closely that's closely associated with self-regulation, was closely associated with school readiness. So as I kind of talked about before, there are some specific benefits. Another thing is that fathers are much more likely to let their children explore when they're little. Moms, innate, because of their innate parenting skills or what have you, are really uncomfortable with their children being out of their sight. Well, men are much more comfortable. And so children, it clearly shows that children are allowed to explore much more when there's a father around. And so those things really tie into cognitive ability and school outcomes.
Now, Kelly, in one of the sessions at the summit geared toward co-parenting, you examined some of the brain differences between males and females. What are those differences, and what is the result of those differences?
Oh, there's a ton. So you can talk about the makeup of the brain, the size of the brain, the chemistry, things like that. We focus more on the communication. So women tend to be more verbal. Guys tend to be more action-oriented. But even the goal of communication is slightly different. So for women, we use a lot of affiliative language. It's all about collaboration and connection. Versus with men, it's more action-oriented. It's
and
more aggressive.
Competitive.
More competitive, exactly. So we may be saying the same thing, but in two different ways, so it can be interpreted differently. So when you think about if you have a non-custodial dad, and maybe I as the mom say, well, can you pick Junior up at 6? I might be kind of making a command, like, I need you to be here at 6, mm-hmm. but because that's the communication style, it sounds more like a question or a request, and sometimes that can cause some fights and miscommunications.
Right. Yeah, you didn't get a yes answer. That's why he wasn't there. You asked a question, and you know
we don't get that.
That's right. A lot of people take their cues on how to behave from the media about the roles of fathers and mothers, and even how a family dynamic is supposed to work. Rod, and I'm going to take a wild guess here that the media isn't helping, is it?
it's inconclusive, I guess you could say. I mean, there's a variety of images out there as it relates to fathers. For those who don't have fathers, and I want to make a distinction between those who don't live with their biological fathers and those who don't have any father figure in their lives. Mm-hmm. So a lot of dads out there like myself who don't live with their kids, but they're involved, or there's a stepfather or a grandfather. So those are things that are helping to alleviate. But for those kids, those boys and girls who have no positive role models, if they're not getting that positive image from the media either, that contributes to the cycle that we're talking
about.
Well,
if you sit a kid down in front of most sitcoms today, the kids are all kind of, from my point of view, bratty. But the mothers and fathers are stupid. Mm. The kids know more than they do. They're not bright people. I don't know why that's funny, but it is. Evidently. Put your headphones on. We'll take a call from Robert in Charlotte. Welcome to the program, Robert.
Thanks for having me. I'm loving this discussion on fatherhood, and I appreciate the topic, and I just wanted to contribute a few things. I think that when we talk about what a father needs to do for their kids, I think we can go a step further. One of the things that I think three things that are very important is you got to give them, your kids a vision for manhood or for womanhood, a vision. Next, a code of conduct, something that they can live by. And finally, you got to give them a transcendent cause. If they live their life ultimately for themselves, it's just not going to be satisfying. And for our family, you know, we serve God, and that's the main thing for us. And especially, you know, this idea for a vision and code of conduct. And also, I model for them how important it is to love and respect their mother. And they know that I love her and that I put her first. There's so many people that they put their kids first. And in a family dynamic, that just ends up raising kids who see themselves as little kings and queens of the household, rather than seeing this is how a mommy and daddy should be, this is how a relationship really should be that's loving. So anyway, I appreciate the time, and I'll take the comments off the air. Thanks.
Thank you. Would you want to comment on that?
Sure. I support particularly his last statement, I'm supporting all his statements, but particularly his last statement, and as I talk with fathers, I often try to tell them that, you know, you have men who are doting fathers to their daughters. But I say that really the biggest impact you're going to have on your daughter is how you treat her mother, irregardless if you guys are in a romantic relationship or not. And that you can't, it's really difficult to have this great impact as a father on your daughter when you're treating her mother with disrespect. And so I certainly support his statement that, you know, children see, particularly girls, they see what a relationship is supposed to look like or how men are supposed to treat women, not by how a father treats them necessarily, but by how their father treats their mother.
Okay. Joyce emails, my son has sole custody of his 3-year-old daughter and is doing all the things a mom would normally do. How does that total responsibility impact the dad relationship he would otherwise have with her?
I think that, you know, that's a minority in regards of a man having sole custody of his child. But about 16% of fathers are single dads having sole custody. And a lot of, you know, research on that minority shows that men are effective fathers. You know, we try to say men are bumbling, stumbling idiots as fathers, but that's not what the research shows. That very effective father, be a very effective parent, just like a mom could be as a single mom.
Mark emails, I haven't finished reading the book yet, but Dr. Meg Meeker's Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters, 10 Secrets Every Father Should Know seems to very strongly support your guest's recent comments regarding the positive role that involved fathers can have in reducing promiscuity, increasing self-confidence and achievement. Have any of your guests read Dr. Meeker's book and research?
I haven't read the book, but I'm familiar with Dr. Meeker's research. And, okay. I mean, a lot of us travel in the same circles. Right.
And finally, from Bill from Matthews, it seems the way our economy is set up today, both parents usually have to work at one or more jobs just to make ends meet. Who is raising our children? The village? At least one parent needs to be home with the kids, which used to be more common when only one breadwinner was necessary. Is that true, you think, that one parent has to be there at home to make this work?
It would be ideal, probably, in most situations, but it's simply not realistic due to the economic demands that most families are experiencing.
That's Rod Garvin, who's a father. Kelly Williamson, senior case manager for Safe Journey Parents as Teachers, Community, and Schools. And Dr. Jeffrey Shears, associate professor of social work at UNC Charlotte and author of What All Dads Should Know. They all participated in this Fatherhood Summit that Dr. Shears put together. And we'll put their contact information on our website at WFAE.org later today. Thank you all for the hour.